the strategy of building parallel culture is the winning one. It's building something that's going to last so that when Rome is sacked by the Visigoths, you'll have culture of your own that will remain standing. Welcome to the Stand Firm podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, February 10th, 2026. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm here with Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. Guys, how are you doing today?
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, good, Nick. Thanks. Doing well.
All right, time for the long-awaited and listener-demanded Stand Firm Super Bowl recap. Was the Seahawks victory more about Drake May's poor play or about Seattle's dominant defense?
JD, you're damn right.
Couldn't tell you, honestly.
Now, like, JD, you played football in college. You should know these things.
I don't know. I can't stand the spectacle that professional sports has become. So I'll go back to watch a D3 football game whenever you want. And I love you know, minor league baseball and sort of things, but between the grandstanding and just the ridiculous spectacle of adults dressing like clowns, and I don't know. I know I'm losing listenership here, but I have some deep feeling about this. And on top of that, they don't let them hit you in the way that I even was hit in like middle school football. I mean, like the number of you watch those reels of like what it was like when Dick Butkus and these people played
Ronnie
football,
Lott.
And it's like. Yeah, like Ronnie Lott would be immediately thrown out after one hit because it would have been targeting and he was amazing. So no, I didn't watch it. I mean, I was looking forward to the commercials after the fact on YouTube, which I watched some of them, and I did tune into. I flipped back and forth between the halftime show, which we are going to talk about, but But no, I was I have deep thoughts. We talked about it last week a little bit, but between the contracts, the spectacle, all the way down to college, the NIL and the sports betting, it really has soured my love for professional sports. I still love sports in general, and so look forward to raising my children and teaching them how to play. But anyway, so that was maybe not the witty banner you were looking for. But there you have it.
Well, the joke was that neither of you would have anything reasonable to say about the Super Bowl, and I've made my point.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, but I was, you know, number 65 in your program, number one in your heart back in college. That was it. That's right. Crushing left guard for the W&L Generals. That's right.
Well, we did think we'd talk more about the Super Bowl this week, or specifically about those halftime shows, the competing halftime shows, more accurately. It is kind of a silly cultural artifact, but that hasn't stopped Christians on Twitter or X from making a huge deal about it. On the one hand, the official halftime show was a depraved humiliation ritual, while Turning Point USA's alternative was a sweet, gospel-centered, family-friendly affair. Or Bad Bunny put on a performance illustrating a Jesus-like love of neighbor while Kid Rock sang about topless dancers and getting drunk. The implicit requirement underneath pretty much every post I saw was that you have to choose which way, Christian man, Bad Bunny or Kid Rock.
It's hard to even talk about it in a serious way, but I mean, I did dutifully try to watch the Bad Bunny. I didn't watch Super Bowl. Our church has a Super Bowl party. I don't go to it because I hate.
I love the curmudgeonly.
You don't even go. He doesn't.
No, I don't go.
I don't even look at the church in that direction when it's happening.
This is why I have an assistant.
Wow.
But you dutifully watch the halftime show.
And I send my family. I send my children and my kids. But
what do you exactly do during this time? Do you just sit in a dark room and
this time I watched the only wholesome. I didn't know Game of Thrones could have a wholesome thing, but they apparently have a wholesome thing out, Night of the Seven Kingdoms. So I watched that. And it's actually really good. It's not terrible. It's much more wholesome than Bad Bunny, actually. If the stories are, I'm told, are correct. But I watched it. I watched the halftime show, and it was in a foreign language. And so I listened to it, but I did find a guy, a Puerto Rican woman, translating it.
Yeah, I'm glad. I really, really glad I found that out, because that really,
Yeah.
I
Helped
mean,
my
goodness
sanctification.
gracious,
Yeah.
jeez,
It
I
was pretty
mean,
bad. I mean,
geez.
it's like I'm glad it was not in English so that a lot of people couldn't understand. It's not as bad as the apparently it's not as the song, one of the songs that he sang, I think he sang three. I couldn't really tell because all kind of ran into each other. But apparently the lyrics were toned down for the Super Bowl, and then when he did explicitly say something horrible, it was bleeped out. But the translation I was watching, the woman was able to say to recognize some pretty explicit things that I wouldn't want my children to hear if I wouldn't want to hear if it were in English.
Well, hearing notwithstanding, I mean, the actual dancing, to the
Oh,
extent you
yeah,
could call
the
it that,
twerking and the
was pornographic. I mean, it was really,
which is
it
not
was like
new to the
watching.
Super Bowl halftime show. I mean, this is old news at this point. Like, that's what you're getting at the Super Bowl halftime show, no matter who the artist is.
Well, remember that, yeah, because back in 2022, I think was it Shakira or something?
Jennifer
Shakira,
Lopez, yeah.
yeah, got together and did their thing on the stage, and it was basically it was pornographic. It was
I think we may
absolutely
have even
pornographic.
spoken about
We
that.
did talk
I
about it,
did. That's right.
and it, but at that point in time, it's the height of the kind of racial tension. So to criticize two women along with lots of other people doing reenacting pornographic scenes on the stage means it meant that we were racists. So
Oh, I thought
because
it
that
just
was an
meant that we were
expression of
prudes.
a Latina or Latinx culture or whatever it was.
Prudes.
Yeah.
It was really, I mean, our kids are going to bed already, but we, but I mean, I would have been horrified. I feel like more so though than perhaps, although I don't know. I mean, it hasn't, I haven't really been paying attention, I guess, other than that one. But I do think that the counterpoint, the turning point counterpoint, was an interesting cultural phenomenon that we are rightly talking about, because it did paint, I think it was Al Mohler or something. Maybe he was saying, or someone was saying recently, the sort of divide, for lack of a better word, between red states and blue states, could not have been more embodied to a certain degree in the discussion, the presentation, and then the fallout from the two competing shows. And then, of course, I think the turning point one got, is at least it's something I read, said it was the second highest live stream to YouTube history or something. I don't know what the first one is. I guess I could have Googled that. But anyway, the point is, a lot of people were watching it, and a lot of people were also watching the Super Bowl. And so, in general terms, I thought it just sort of dovetailed with what we spoke about last week, which was that this is considered appropriate for public consumption without extreme warning or a paper bag over it. Lyrics, dancing, all of it combined, then, really just is an indication of the depravity of our popular culture, whatever else you want to say about it. And even if there hadn't been, or particularly if there hadn't been some sort of counterpoint to compare it to, it still would have, on its own merits, been something that, like you said, Matt, I would have been horrified if my children could have understood it and didn't want them to even see it. And that, as you noted, probably just goes for the Super Bowl halftimes in general, at least since I always remember where I was when the famous wardrobe malfunction, because I was a new, Liza and I were newlyweds, and we went to the headmaster's Super Bowl party at a school that I was working as a youth minister and sort of a adjunct chaplain, and they were all horrified, because this had happened, and I was too, but they were, apologizing to me because I was the Christian minister in the room. And I was like, well, if only they knew. Well, what we know now would have seemed somewhat tame by comparison. The intentional wardrobe, their normal malfunctions. It's just, that's what we want. That's what we got.
There's so many interesting things, or it depends on how you define interesting, I guess. But there are a lot of sort of weird ins and outs that we could talk about. There's the fact that even in 2026, with the depravity of our culture, the NFL would never have let lyrics like that be sung live on TV in English. So there's the assumption that even though one of the stated reasons for having a halftime show in Spanish is to make your brand more accessible and widely loved in the Hispanic community in America, but then you're broadcasting this disgusting language. So there's the one thing. And then we would have to admit that Kid Rock is no paragon of family-friendly music, but it's really interesting. I've read a couple artists who viewed his or the Turning Point show as really like an arc of redemption story where he came out as Kid Rock and sang his disgusting song, and then there were some Christian hymns sung, and then he came back out, reintroduced with his real name, and then talked about Jesus and reading the Bible. So yeah. Even though you might say we really wish we didn't have to hear the stuff about topless dancers and getting drunk, the story that's told is a good story to tell.
Amen. Yeah, it's like the same narrative redemptive arc as Tim Allen. But, you know, just to be fair to Kid Rock, I know that song, Ba with the Ba, I think it's actually the name of
Indeed.
It. Like, that is, it is nothing as explicit or as pornographic, at least as the translation of the Bad Bunny song that I read.
Right.
Just to be fair. No, it's not something that I want to, you know, my kids to learn and we sing at church, for sure. It is on at the gym.
Maybe
often,
on a seeker sensitive Sunday, right?
That's right. And come out with that. But I was horrified. I have to say, I mean, and I'm not, well, maybe I am a prude or becoming a prude. I don't know how one becomes, but I thought those lyrics were pornographic. They weren't even just vulgar. You know, it wasn't even just bad language. I mean, it was like, made me feel, I felt bad, like, after reading it. So this is something that I wish I could rewind my brain just to know that that was somehow sung in good conscience or listened to by, I guess, reportedly millions, like, as a matter of course. It was like Two Live Crew, like, when I was in middle school. Like, you have to have had something like that to have that explicit discussion of human intimacy, we should say.
And millions who would have understood it live in real time.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing, is that the language, or the bleeping out of various words and the toning down of the language for the Super Bowl is, you know, it's very, they think we're stupid. Like, okay, you're having people acting out sex on the screen, and you're worried about it's, I'm sure it's the FCC, but you're, and so you're worried about the bad language in Spanish that might be there. That's it. That's, I'm sorry. That's yes, you're right. A lot of the Spanish speakers who listened to that would have heard the bad language, but everybody else also got the visuals. Everybody else also got the twerking. And I'm sorry, I don't, twerking is a lewd, disgusting, vile move. It's horrible. I don't think it's a cultural artifact. Where did, every time I see someone twerk, and I know I'm a prehistoric person here at this point, but every time I see a woman twerk, I'm thinking, what are you doing? And what on earth? Are you, stop it. I want to rush up and put clothes on her, you know, cover her up.
More
stop.
Clothes anyway.
You and Bob Newhart right there. Just stop it.
But it was beyond twerking. I mean, you had people rubbing up against each other. You had two men rubbing up against each other. The language requirement of the FCC, if that's what the NFL is worried about, it's nonsensical. It's just ridiculous. It's like, you know, while I'm shooting up drugs, heroin mainlining, I'm going to be sure I don't cuss. I mean, come on. You're already perverse. You're already perverting the American public. Either pervert the American public and admit you're doing that, or don't. Right? And my preference would be don't. How about you not pervert the American public either in
work
or in dance? How about you get us? I don't particularly like this particular kind of music. I don't like. There's very few types of music that I actually like, and this is not one of them.
That's a shocker.
Are you talking about the quote unquote singing or the music itself?
The
because
music
I actually
style, right?
Liked the music.
But that's fine. There are lots of people like you who like that type of stuff. I don't care.
Lots of people like you.
More people like you than like me, but they can have the kind of the style they want. Just please don't make it so embarrassing and humiliating and gross for people who are trying to watch. Even Phil Vischer came out, if I'm understanding the process correctly, he came out and said at first, oh, this is a wonderful cultural expression or whatever. But then when he got a hold of the lyrics, he deleted his post. And now he says he's against it. Even if something offends Phil Vischer, that the left does, or that progressives do, then you can pretty well assure that it's way, 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 way across the line.
Yeah, the funniest thing that I saw with respect to that is they were saying the guy guys praising Bad Bunny, who's written the best song about a Bad Bunny, in Christian history. The VeggieTales fan would know that. But no, I think, it goes back to what we were talking about last week. And, at some level, you would say, well, it's not a vast conspiracy. People are appealing to lowest common denominator, sex sells, all this stuff. And I think there's some truth in that. But at the same time, there's also a lot of people involved in, not just the halftime show, but like the, I'm thinking of Olympic opening ceremonies. I'm thinking of other sort of high profile public events. And there are thoughtful people, well, I obviously disagree with them, who see these rightly as vehicles for cultural change, or at the very least cultural statements. And you just wonder what that conversation is like at that level when you have something like this particular guy and his song, other than we want to keep moving as far away from, anything that would be considered moralistic or, universal truth, goodness and beauty, or any of these supposed eternals that bring with it questions about God and all of the past that we're trying to clearly eradicate from our communal discourse, because it seems unnecessarily provocative unless there was a reason behind it.
Yeah, just like you and I, if somebody handed us a microphone and said, 100 million people are going to listen to you for 20 minutes, within some sort of reason, you can say whatever you want. You'd be thoughtful about how you spent that time.
Yeah,
You
for sure.
would plan out, just like, you're going to spend $6 million on 30 seconds on a Super Bowl ad. You're going to be really thoughtful about what you're going to put in those 30 seconds. And so, sure, if you're an influencer of any kind, whether you're a musician or a preacher, you're an evangelist for what you believe. And so somebody like Bad Bunny and the producers of that show are evangelists for what they believe.
When it just comes back to what we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks, even is the linchpin of Christian morality in the world, revolved around the beginnings of the, rising above your most sort of animalistic and base desires, which have to do with sex and, physical urges, as it were. And so the counterpoint to that would be a celebration of, essentially anything goes, which is what we saw in part in that show. And it just is a reminder to me, at least, that that like the diagnosis of Romans 1 in particular, and sort of the breakdown of the conscience with respect to the sanctity of the human body and its divine use, or teleos, is all still right in front of us. Like, it's right there, it's right, and it's part of our cultural conversation. It's part of the assault on the church and the gospel, and it's part of the defense of that on the other side, and I think it's it was just it, I don't know, it was I guess it was funny. I don't know, you laugh or cry to see the like, I mean, I'm glad Phil Vischer pulled his tweet off, but the normal cast of quote Christian influencers came out with the same celebration of our blessings of liberty, that we got to watch in the halftime show, and then the decrying the I didn't even read a lot of negatives about the turning point, other than it was seemingly hypocritical for people to like, to not point out that Kid Rock's music is also, mostly not family friendly. But I also read that. I must have read that same article you did, Nick, because I didn't even know who it was when it came out, and they announced his real name, and they had the hat on when I went back and watched it. And I found the song and the sort of pathos behind it to be quite touching. Whatever else you want to say about Kid Rock, it's like, well, stranger things have happened, and people get older, and they realize that their life is had consequence in ways they didn't want. I was reminded to watch the Beastie Boys documentary, and like they basically have repudiated like half of their catalog because they're like adults with children now, and they're like, I shouldn't have ever said any of that. But I think I thought it was touching. I mean, whatever else you want to say about it, I thought the actual song was an emotional, touching song for him.
One of the things that I read online, this is not from anybody well known, just somebody that I forgot I'm still friends with on Facebook, but he wrote, "I watched the Bad Bunny halftime show. I saw Acts chapter 2, musicians and dancers and actors sharing with one another and taking care of everyone in need. John chapter 2, a wedding feast with a great band and bread and wine. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, Bad Bunny ended with a message of faith, hope, and love. The greatest of these is love. I don't speak Spanish, but this message came through beautifully. I heard that Kid Rock, quote, mentioned Jesus. That's nice, I suppose. And this is...
Where's the chapter and verse for the twerking and the grinding?
A distillation of the falsely attributed to St. Francis quotation to preach the gospel always, when necessary, use words. Like, I'll take the actual quote-unquote mentioned Jesus. Thank you very much. Like, that's what I actually want. That's what a Christian does, is confess Jesus with his lips, not to pick something that might be an example of common grace at best.
Even if you, even without the translation, this guy should have been able to see enough in the dancing numbers to realize, oh, wait, no, this isn't John chapter 2. This is more like Genesis 19, maybe. Or
six.
Yeah, but this is not John. So yeah, I've seen that. I mean, I think there's online on X, there's a segment of evangelical opinion that as soon as they figure out who the conservative evangelicals don't like, or something the conservative evangelicals are upset with, they'll will rush out as fast as they can and post about how wonderful it is and how amazing it is. A lot of that posturing was around the most dangerous place to be in the online universe is between maybe a winsome evangelical and his social media account when he's trying to signal.
You're speaking there. Something of personal experience here, Matt. I think so. Well, that begs the question for me, or not begs the question. I'm misusing that. That brings up a question for me. What is the both? I mean, we talked a little about the end game, and I think it's fairly clear that there's people that would, the more, and we talked about last week too, the more, the less control people have, the more they're given over to themselves, then the greater power they can be exerted on them, whether through social media companies or gambling intrigues or the government. So I think that's fairly straightforward, at least in my mind. But with respect to the church, I may have a lot of thoughts about this, but I do wonder what y'all think about, not just the reaction. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of clickbait and everyone likes to get fired up, and I'm part of that too, and that's fine. But I don't think that's a long-term strategy for addressing this cultural decline. I think that at the very least you could say whatever else you want to say. My great-grandmother would have been mortified to have even seen, the cheerleaders on the sideline, much less them like writhing around each other. And I think I would say that, whatever else you want to say about it, at least with respect to sexual mores, that's a negative step we have taken. That is a decline. So again, I don't know, I'm just wondering what do y'all think, like when you think kind of reversal, addressing rejection of, like, what's the tactic here for the church in the short, medium, and long term?
I think even if you disagree with the content of this particular quote unquote all American halftime show, the strategy of building parallel culture is the winning one. This is, I think, what Rodrer was after with the Benedict option. It's not really totally closing yourself off and separating, it's building something that's going to last so that when Rome is sacked by the Visigoths, you'll have culture of your own that will remain standing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I agree with that. Two things, one maybe related to that is, I've read some people saying that that's what the TPUSA thing was kind of doing, this was kind of a pilot. And since it was successful in the sense that it gathered so much of an audience, that it kind of shot a, put a shot across the bow of the NFL for next year. Like, we will steal your audience. We will take away from your halftime show. And now with the success of the TPSA thing, they can get advertisers in a way they couldn't before. So mm-hmm. next year, so the idea is that, what I've heard anyway, is the idea is that next year they'll be able to put on something much more grand and
maybe get Creed.
Yeah, Creed. Creed back.
So
Switchfoot.
I'm not commenting here or there about TPUSA and TPUSA as an organization, but there is the idea of creating more wholesome structures that are not beholden to the legacy media, to the approval of our cultured elites, I think is essential. TPUSA, there's some things about it that I have some issues with, but the basic idea I think is a right one. And that, so I agree with you on that, but I also think it's like everything, it's very local. Like our churches, our congregations have to be places where the gospel is preached, true virtue is discussed and modeled, where there's close knit people loving each other, caring for each other. Even, you know, I'm sure you're, maybe not you, JD, but I know most congregations in the country have their people on the right and the left politically. But you're over there in Hillsdale, JD. I'm not sure you have that problem, but
big filter. There's a big filter.
But the church needs to be a place where Christ is king, right? And that all political loyalties.
I want to meet some of these left wingers you have in your congregation.
I don't have any left wingers. I have people who are more liberal than me.
Well, there's a spectrum. Well, I would say there's then to that extent. It's definitely the same spectrum here. There are people who are more liberal than you at our church, I can assure you.
but the church should be a place where Christ is king, right? And his sovereignty is clear, so that when you step into the building on a Sunday morning, you really are stepping into a different realm, a different kingdom, a different country, and that country expands as more churches are planted and Christianity spreads. But I think actually that's the local. Building a healthy church is the most important thing that you can do as an individual, whether you're a clergy person or not, to change the trajectory of our culture.
Amen. Yeah, and in person.
Yes. Yeah. I remember once, this is years ago, being in a car with you, JD, and we saw an anti-abortion advertisement, I think, on a truck in front of us. And you made the comment at that point that has stuck with me all these years, that the best way to reduce the number of abortions in America is to increase the number of Christians in America. Well, so by the same way that the proliferation of gospel preaching churches is the way to save the culture to which those churches are preaching.
Right. I would agree with that statement still, but I would also say that in addition to severe and draconian penalties for everyone involved, would also help reduce abortions. So, but the sentiment is still apt from the internal out. The renovation of the heart, by the Spirit through the gospel, is the way, Christian man. But that being said, I do think, at least, that was years ago, I've grown in my appreciation of the, coercive power of the sword, and also the moral aspect of it, every law and every...
And not just the coercive power, but the teaching power.
That's right. And so, I'm not saying that there's something about a culture legitimizing public displays of obscenity, which is what they used to be calling. We used to have laws against obscenity that has already determined what is good and true and beautiful to a certain degree. And it is, at least in that respect, in direct odds with Christian teaching on, sex and beauty. And so, again, I'm just thinking out loud, but I think, you're right, Matt. In the short term, we do exercise local church, not authority, but kingdom priority and gospel preaching and things like this. And I do think, like you said, Matt, I mean, Nick, alternative or sort of other structures, parallel structures that don't flagrantly mock, your convictions would be nice to have. I'm reminded of like how the story behind Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ, he basically paid for that himself. And then it was such a huge hit that it forced the industry to at least reconsider things, like Top Gun Maverick, these movies that aren't just dripping with sanctimony and contempt for the actual people watching them. That would be nice to have an alternative. And so I think it'll be interesting to see, the problem Christians have had, and this is just something that's pretty well established is that we've had a hard time bringing at least contemporary parallels to movies and music and literature that have been as high quality or at least as rich and sophisticated as their non-Christian counterparts. And I think that's also changing a little bit. I was heartened to hear, for whatever reason, came up in my Spotify, like some Christian rap, and it wasn't Lecrae and it wasn't the other guy. It was like a whole new group of people. And I,
Such an
for a
indictment,
moment,
Lecrae or the other guy.
that's right. But to the point, it was like I listened to it initially and I didn't know it was Christian. Like that was what was at least the beats, you know, because it's Laz and I have a game we could play where we used to have radio dials. You remember those? And you could dial the radio and be like, how quickly can we determine if this is a Christian station or not? And it was literally like one chord, like, oh, that's definitely Stephen Curtis Chapman right there, or Carmen or whatever. God bless him, and I still love those guys. So yeah, I mean it's a challenge, obviously, and it's a challenge we have to address because you know there is an incredible power in visual communication, and you know culture is a massive sort of you know has an outsized weight in formation if you're not whether you're aware of it or not. And so to be aware of it is the first step, and then to do what you can to at least appropriately arm and equip and prepare your children and parishioners to withstand the negative influences, or at least to be aware of walk around them, but also hopefully be a part of building, you know, a more beautiful way, as Paul would say. So, I mean, I'm supportive of it. I'll be interested to see. You know, we have a ton of these apps. You know, I forget the names. It's like all of these like retrieval TV shows and stories and cartoons for like young kids, you know, that were like before everything went woke or whatever. I mean, Canon Plus has a whole section, you know, of like classic audiobooks, and there's like Bent Key, and there's another one. I mean, they all have these strange names. But we found those to be, they're trying to do that. They're trying to rebuild something of a media presence, you know, that's parallel to Disney. You know, I mean, that's going to take a while, but you know, I support it and I'm here for it, and I've been edified largely by it. So it'll be interesting to see what develops from this Counterpoint halftime show, and if and when there'll be other things like it that pop up. You know, if there's, you know, 10 million people or whatever watching this 20-minute show halftime, I mean, that was pretty good market share, or at least a pretty good indication that at least you could monetize that. And so we'll see.
I was scrolling the other day on this. I saw the editor of the new Netflix Chronicles of Narnia series,
Oh yeah.
and
Is it
he's
Greta Gerwig? Oh no,
yeah,
she's
Greta
the
Gerwig is the
she's
director,
the director, yeah.
right? This guy is the editor, and he was saying, "Well, we've decided not to lean too heavily on the source material,
He
because."
decided he wasn't going to reference it. He wasn't even going to look at
Based on a fictional story. That's right.
We're doing our own thing, right? So part of the cultural program for the ideological left is to take our popular virtue communicating, value communicating stories that we tell within Christendom and corrupt them, make a death work out, right? And so can't that can be done in reverse too, though. I mean, so one of the reasons I mentioned the Night of the Seven Kingdoms yesterday, because one of the reasons I watched that is because it was apparently done because of the outcry against the basic pornography of Game of Thrones and the cynicism of it. I mean, I don't know if you've read the books, but it's a very cynical kind of the outlook on human life. It's everything's dark and disgusting and tawdry. But this was like an actual classical knight tale, which is interesting. There was virtue, courage, honor, sacrifice.
Just wait till the next season, Matt.
Yeah, I'm
They
sure they're
got
gonna.
you
Then
hooked.
we get
They
the.
got you hooked. That's right.
He turns out to be
Then
gay.
the knight becomes a princess. That's right. And there you have it.
I think that there, anyway, the popular desire for something of substance won over, at least for the time being, a company or a franchise. So they couldn't do what they
Yeah, amen.
normally do. So I mean, there's that. There's if Christians would be willing to not give money and would be, and not just Christians, people who don't want filth in public would be willing not to stand for filth in public and yet praise and give favor to artists and creators who are, whether Christian or not, who are not putting out trash. The dollar speaks. So, I mean, that's also something I think we can do is.
And I think that there's a sense in which those stories will win out in the end because they are reflections of the story underneath all stories, which is a story of redemption, of creation. Yes, fall and sin and struggle, but ultimately recreation, resurrection, and redemption. That's why those stories are the ones that have to get undercut. That's what where the cynicism has to come against those. So it's not like we're going to go to the cynical stories and reverse them. We actually have the story that ends with an empty tomb and a risen God. And all of our wonderful stories are, like I said, emanations of or reflections of that. You know, they call it the greatest story ever told for a reason.
Amen. Well, that's a good place. Normally I would want to end it in a grid crescendo and gospel sermon, but you beat me to it there, Nick. So there
you have it. Fair enough. Well, it's getting on our time anyway. So thank you guys. And thanks for our listener for listening to Stand Firm today. If you want to keep the conversation going with us, please be in touch, rate and review the podcast on iTunes, send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com or join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks to JD Koch and Matt Kennedy. I'm Nick Lannon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.